you were having a girls' night out. And she said, we want something fun, something kind of on girlfriends. So I had a session that I do on girlfriends, and that's what she asked for. And so I'm absolutely thrilled to be here tonight sharing with each of you, because I'm getting to share on one of my all-time favorite things in life, and that is girlfriends. My girlfriends are very, very precious to me, so I'm very excited about sharing with you tonight about girlfriends. Before we do talk about girlfriends, though, I'd like us to talk just a little bit about friendship in general. Now, what is a friend? Think with me for a moment. How would you define friend to somebody? Well, Webster's Dictionary defines friendship as a relationship of mutual affection and goodwill, a harmonious cooperation. And what I really like about that definition is I think it points out the two sides of friendship, that there's a giving and there's a receiving as well. And before we go any further, I think it's very important that we talk about that for just a little bit. Because, you know, some of us are really good at the giving part of friendship, aren't we? We are really quick to volunteer and do for you. We will help and we will help take care of you and meet your needs. But we're not very good at receiving friendship, and we're not very good at receiving help, and we're definitely not very good at asking for help. And then there are others that seem to always be needy. We seem to be needing help all the time. We're the ones that are, you know, always have some major crisis in our life, and we're always wanting to cry on your shoulder, but we never quite seem to have enough time to let you cry on ours. So some of us are better at the receiving end than we are at the giving end. But for a really deep, meaningful, quality friendship to develop, I think we need to become both good givers as well as receivers. Now, by that, I don't mean that friendship is always a 50-50 kind of deal. And please do not leave here tonight thinking that that's what I said. Because there are times in my life when I am more needy than my friends. And when the circumstances of life really seem to conspire against me, I need a little extra help from my girlfriends. But then there are also times when they're more needy and they need a little extra help from me. So what I'm talking about is just the balance, the overall balance of things. We need to be both giving and receiving from our friends. I think that's a very healthy thing for us to do in our friendships. So that's what a friend is. But who needs a friend? We absolutely all do, don't we? There's not one of us that doesn't need a friend. As a matter of fact, the philosopher Bruce says, no life is so strong and complete but that it doesn't yearn for the hand of a friend. We all need a hand of a friend. I've just finished reading this book, Friends Through Thick and Thin. It's written by four women who have been best friends for over 30 years. And so it is a hoot listening to them tell stories on one another. They do a lot of tattling in this book, and I laughed out loud several times when I read it. And one of them in this book pointed out the fact that even research is showing us now that we all need friends just for our health's sake. She says that recent studies by major universities indicate that health problems we call depression and low self-esteem could just as accurately be called loneliness. These same studies say that people who have friends live longer, have fewer illnesses, and that a close circle of friends actually helps the immune system work. So I don't know about you, but when I read this, I thought, so does that mean that when I go have a banana split with one of my best girlfriends, I'm really doing something healthy? I don't know, but that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking I can pretty much justify just about anything as long as I'm doing it with a girlfriend. It's good for my health. So I like that very much. I like what she says there. I saw a greeting card one time that said, friends are the gifts that we give ourselves. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure that I believe that, because to me, a gift is an extra. It's a special treat. And that's not how I view my girlfriends at all. I do not view them as extras or as special treats in my life. I absolutely cannot imagine life without my girlfriends. To me, it would be like experiencing a rainbow without the color, or experiencing ice cream without the flavor. And those are very sad thoughts for this girl. So I think that friends are essential to my life. They're not just added bonuses. I really feel strongly what Mary Mitford says when she says, I thank God far more for my friends than for my daily bread. For friendship is the bread of the heart. And that's how I feel about my girlfriends. They are the bread of the heart. They are life itself to me, and I can't imagine living without them. A friend is what the heart needs all the time, I believe. So why should we celebrate our friendships? Because they're what adds the spice and the flavor and the color to our life. And I think it's very important that we do not just celebrate the special occasions in our life, but that we celebrate the special people in our life as well. Well, what is so special about girlfriends in particular? What makes a girlfriend so special? Lots of things come to my mind. As I said, I'm kind of an email nut, and I had something come across my computer the other day. The top 10 things that only women understand. And I think looking at this list will kind of help us see what is so special about a girlfriend. The facial expressions of cats. Men don't get that. Number 9, the need for the same style of shoes in several different colors. Only another woman would understand that, am I right? Number 8, why bean sprouts aren't just weeds. Number 7, fat clothes. Now, you know, if there was a man in this audience, he'd be going, fat clothes? What are fat clothes? Clothes that make you look fat? Clothes that are fat? They would all just have puzzled looks on our faces. But I don't have to explain to one of you ladies what fat clothes are, do I? No, you are nodding your heads. You are with me on this. Fat clothes are the clothes that have a little extra elastic in them. On those days when you just don't feel good and you need a little more room, you know, kind of a T-shirt and sweats kind of day. So one of the things that only women understand is fat clothes. Number 6, taking a car trip without trying to beat your best time. Number 5, the difference between beige, off-white, and eggshell. Now, how many men do you know that would even admit that there is a difference between beige, off-white, and eggshell? Number 4, cutting your bangs to make them grow. Totally do not get that whole concept, do they? You come home, well, why didn't you get your hair cut? I thought you were letting it grow. Well, you know, you got to trim those edges every now and then. Number 3, eyelash curlers. Number 2, the number 2 thing that only women understand is the inaccuracy of every bathroom scale ever invented. Now, those things are not right, are they? They absolutely are not. It's a conspiracy in those bathroom scales. But the number 1 thing that only women understand is other women. Is that not true? That is so true. There's just something about a good girlfriend that understands certain things that we just can't explain to a man. There are not enough words to somehow get across the point. I love what it said in this book. That's what girlfriends are for. Let's see if I can find it right here. It says, but who, with whom but a girlfriend can you be shamelessly silly, reason in a totally illogical manner without fear of judgment, blubber with guaranteed consolation, change your mind without explanation, recite endless details with no point at all, be absolutely honest about how much you spent for your clothes, or rely on unqualified sympathy for an overweight body, an overdue period, or an overbearing mother-in-law. Only with a girlfriend can you do those things. You know, I think that we as women must have an extra gene in our body for connectedness. We just have this need for connectedness. Now, I have read about this need we have in books. I've read about it in magazines. But even if I hadn't read about it, I would believe that we have a need for connectedness based solely on the observation of watching little girls play. Now, I am a true 90s mom in that I am a soccer mom, and every Saturday morning you can find me at the soccer field cheering my son on. And about a month ago, I was at the soccer field, and I had the unique opportunity of watching 2 little 5-year-old girls show up at the soccer field at the same time, not knowing that each other was going to be there. And when they saw each other, they ran, they grabbed hold of each other, they squealed, they giggled, they laughed. And then they realized they had the same shirt on. And the whole thing started all over again. They pointed at each other's shirt. They squealed and giggled some more. Then they walked around and showed everybody, look, we're wearing the same shirt. And then I watched them grab hands and run off and play. And I couldn't take my eyes off of them. And I saw that while they held hands, they continued to hold hands the whole time they were together, whispering secrets to one another. Now, how many little boys have you all watched do that and play like that? Absolutely not. Their whole idea of physical touch and closeness is wrestling and punching and hitting on each other. Totally different scenario, but we as women do seem to have this extra special need for connectiveness. Now, when I was in the third grade, I religiously followed a schedule that my best friend Kim Dunn had made out on how we were to wear our hair every day of the week. And she'd have Monday side ponytail on the right, Tuesday parted down the middle straight, Wednesday on the left curly. And I tell you, I followed that religiously because I wanted to be like my friend Kim Dunn. I wanted to have a special connectedness to her. And so I don't think it's just a childhood thing, but it's something that we never seem to grow out of. As a matter of fact, I wonder how many of you women would be brave enough to admit tonight that you actually called one of your girlfriends in this room to ask them what they were going to wear tonight. Yeah, I'm seeing some guilty faces right here. Are you going dressy or casual? Just kind of dressy or real dressy? Skirt or pants? And you are all looking guilty, I must say. So you know just what I'm talking about. We do seem to have this extra special need for connectedness. But what I mostly love about my girlfriends is that girlfriends are the family we get to choose for ourselves. And if you think about it for a moment, none of us got to choose the families that we grow up in, did we? As a matter of fact, if God were to give each of you a ballot sheet, and if in the left-hand margin he would have listed each and every member in your family tree, and if next to that margin he had a yes and a no column, and you were given the option of voting on whether or not you wanted to keep all those folks, I am going to guess there's one or two apples on your family tree that you might not have kept in your little orchard there. So we don't get to choose the families we came from, nor do we get to choose the families that come with our husbands, do we? Nope, we don't choose them either. But the one family that we do get to choose is our girlfriends, because girlfriends are the family that we choose for ourselves. And I think that's why I love my girlfriends so very, very much. I heard one time that we are to treat our friends as family and we're to treat our family as friends. And I think there's an incredible amount of wisdom in that little bitty saying. If we treated our friends like they weren't options, like they were flesh and blood, I think our friendships would be deeper. And if we were to treat our family members with the same kindness and courtesy that we treat our girlfriends, I believe those relationships would be better as well. So I think there's a lot to that. What I would like to do tonight is I would like to share with you some of the lessons that I have learned from my girlfriends, from this family that I have got to choose for myself. And I wasn't able to haul them all down here to Duncan with me, so you're just going to have to take my word for it. But the first girlfriend I'd like to introduce you to is my good friend, Denise. Now, Denise and I have literally been friends through thick and thin. Our friendship dates back past labor pains and stretch marks. It dates back past saying our wedding vows, because we became friends in college in the singles group at our home church that we both still attend. So we've been friends for a very long time. And Denise and I have shared virtually everything that there is to share. We maternity shopped together. I bought tops that went with her skirts. She bought tops that went with my skirts. We've shared clothes. We've shared children. We've shared desserts. We've shared virtually everything you could think of except for husbands. Because you know, ladies, there is one line that even a good girlfriend cannot cross, and that would be the line right there we've got drawn in big, bold marker, permanent ink. But we have shared almost anything. And you know, my friend Denise has more friends than any other human that I know. And the reason she has more friends, I believe, is she has followed the number one rule of friends. And this is the major lesson that I've learned from my friend Denise. And that is that you must be a friend to have a friend. And I'm sure most of you probably remember your mother saying that to you when you were a little girl. You've got to be a friend if you want to have a friend. I know I remember mine saying that. The big motivational guru, Dale Carnegie, says that you can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years trying to get other people interested in you. And that's the way that my friend Denise works. But unfortunately, I don't think that's the way most of us work. We pretty much go into group hoping that somebody will want to be our friend, don't we? Hoping that somebody will come and sit by us and start a conversation with us, as opposed to going out into the world and looking for people that we can be friends to, looking for people who look like they may need a friend, but not my friend Denise. Well, it is more difficult for some of us to make friends and to be friends than it is for others of us. So I'd like to give just 7 quick tips on how to be a good friend and how to grow a good girlfriend. And the first tip is to create opportunities for friendship. Simply, we've got to get out there. You know, we are not going to make good girlfriends by sitting home watching Oprah and eating chocolate M&Ms. That's just not going to happen. That is not going to increase our sphere of friends. That might be okay every now and then, but it is not going to deepen the level of our friendships, nor are we going to make more friends doing that. But we've got to get out to where the people are. That means going to that Sunday school party. That means signing up for that women's Bible study when you don't know another soul that's going to be in that study. But we've got to get out to where the people are. The second tip for growing good girlfriends is to show yourself friendly. And do not wait for someone to come to you. Now just imagine with me for a moment. What if every woman in this room waited for somebody else to come to her to be her friend? This would be a very cold and lonely place. If we're always waiting for people to come to us, we're not going to have the kind of friendships that we yearn for. We need to give out what we want. If we want friends, we need to show ourselves friendly. We need to be friendly. What that means is you can't walk into your Sunday school class, find the first available seat, and sit down without saying a word to anybody. Now, being from a Baptist church like you ladies are, I know that most events in this church probably there's food involved. Am I right? So if you're going to make some girlfriends, you've got to get to where the coffee and the donuts are. You've got to get to where the people are, whether it's pie or homemade ice cream fellowship. You've got to be a lot of watermelon around in this town in the summertime. Whatever it is, you kind of got to be where the people congregate, and that's usually around where the food and the drinks are. Or you can look around a room, and if you see a woman who's sitting in one of those chairs by herself or maybe standing off to the side of the room looking a little uncomfortable or out of place, then a way to show yourself friendly would be to make a beeline to her and to strike up a conversation. That's a way to make a good girlfriend. Third tip is to look for common interests and develop them. You know, in times past, women used to get together for quilting bees and to can, and a lot of that they did for necessity. Some of it, I think, they also did just because they wanted to be together. Now, I don't know, do you ladies do cropping parties here in Duncan, the creative memories, picture album kind of parties? I have a group of girlfriends in Oklahoma City that get together once a month to put their pictures in picture albums. And they cut up their pictures in fun little shapes, and they spend way too much money on stickers and colored markers and that kind of thing. But one of the things that I have learned is when you get into the wee hours of the morning, there is a lot more being shared around those tables than just good page layout ideas. So whatever it is that you have an interest in, if you like to read, form a book club or go to your local library and see if they have a book club. Maybe you play tennis. Join a local tennis league. And then as soon as that last ball is hit, do not make a beeline for your car and get out of the place, but hang around long enough to have a Coke and maybe talk to a few ladies. Whatever it is that your interests are, you can pretty much find somebody who's interested. If you're a young mother and you're at the local McDonald's and your child is climbing through the mazes and the balls and all that kind of stuff, chances are you don't have to look very far at all before you find another woman who's doing the exact same thing. And if you don't know one other thing about her, if you don't know anything about her personality, where she comes from, what her name is, you know immediately that you have one interest in common, and that is that she cares about the welfare of her child. And that alone is enough to strike up a conversation, just looking for common interests. The fourth tip for growing a good girlfriend is to be genuinely interested in other people's lives. Remember the Dale Carnegie quote? about you can make more friends in 2 months by being interested in other people than you can in 2 years, trying to get them interested in you. Being genuinely interested in other people takes us a long way down that road to making some good girlfriends. And one of the ways that we show interest in other people is by learning the art of asking good questions. Not questions that can be answered with a simple one-word answer, not questions that can just be answered yes or no, but questions that really start to pull somebody out so that you can learn something about them. Questions like, what are some of the things you've been involved in church before? What do you find is the best thing about being mother of teenagers? Something that kind of draws them out and so that you can learn a little bit about them. Proverbs 25 says, the purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws him out. And a good girlfriend knows how to draw somebody else out and show interest in their life. A fifth tip for growing good girlfriends is to be yourself. I think it's very, very important that we're transparent in our relationships. I think it's unfortunate that most mornings we as women get up not only and put makeup on our faces, but I think more often than not, we put invisible masks on our faces as well. And we go through the day trying to give off an impression to everyone around us that we're something and someone other than what we really are. And when we do that, we totally thwart the whole possibility of friendship. Because then we always have that nagging insecurity in us that, well, maybe, you know, if they really knew what I was like, they wouldn't like me. If she knew what I really thought about, maybe she wouldn't want to be my friend. So we've got to be comfortable in our own skin to be ourselves and to be transparent. And the flip side of that coin, obviously, is we must be accepting of other people as well. When their masks start to come down and we start to see some weaknesses, some character flaws, it's very important that we don't just run for cover, but that we stay faithful. A sixth tip is to have reasonable expectations. There are two things that come to my mind here, and the first is that friendship takes time. The philosopher Aristotle says that wishing to be friends is quick work, but developing friends is a slow ripening fruit. And that's very true. Now, there are times, ladies, aren't there, that we know instantly upon meeting someone, they have got friendship material written all over them. We can just tell that we are going to hit it off and be great girlfriends. But more often than not, friendships take time to develop. I know my local newspaper, an article I read not too long ago, said that it takes about 2 years to develop a really deep, intimate friendship. And now I think as Christian women, when we are very like-hearted about our beliefs and our convictions, I think that helps us get there a little quicker sometimes. But more often than not, I think it does take a while to develop a good friendship. It may take many, many overtures of friendship before somebody finally starts to respond. So we do need to be reasonable that friendship takes time. And a second reasonable expectation is that no one person can meet all of your needs. You know, I don't believe that God means for one person to meet all our needs, not our husbands or not one particular girlfriend. When we as women look to another human person to meet all our needs, we become very disenchanted very quickly, don't we? And we smother that person because we are too needy, too demanding, and we get too stingy with our friendships. Not to mention that we miss out on a lot of great opportunities to know and love and experience a lot of different friendships. So I do think it's very important that we not try to make one person meet all our needs. And the seventh tip for growing good girlfriends is to meet a practical need. Maybe sitting around your table tonight, you heard one of the ladies say that she's getting ready to move. Well, that ought to automatically perk your ears up to some very practical needs that she's going to have. And to be a good girlfriend, you might volunteer to go help her pack her dishes. That's something that anybody can figure out how to do. So that would be something that you could do to meet a practical need. Maybe the lady next door is getting ready to have a new baby. Well, if you've ever had a baby, you know one sure way to endear yourself to her is to take over a meal for her family that she does not have to prepare or fix or clean up after. That would be a sure way to meet a very practical need and to become a good friend. Maybe you're very organized, and you could offer to help somebody else set up their file systems at home, to set up an email account on their computer. Whatever it is that you're particularly gifted at, that would be something that you could do to meet a very practical need in somebody else's life. So there are lots of things that we can do to meet practical needs. Well, my friend Denise, as I said, has more girlfriends than anybody else I know. But how she talks and what she does lets me know on a regular basis that I am a priority in her life. So not only have I learned the lesson that you must be a friend to have a friend to her, but I've also learned how precious a faithful friend is, one who will be there over the long haul. I've heard it said that the most priceless antiques are old friends, and I very much believe that. I very much believe that. Oliver Wendell Holmes says, "There is no friend like an old friend who has shared our morning days. There's no greeting like his welcome. No homage like his praise." There really is nothing like the hand of an old friend, is there? Well, the second friend I'd like to introduce you all to tonight is my other oldest girlfriend, and that's my friend Mary Ann. Mary Ann is my best buddy from college. And the main lesson I've learned from my friend Mary Ann is not to judge a book by her cover, and that friends come in all shapes and sizes. Because if I were to stand my friend Mary Ann next to me, each one of you, I guarantee, would have run through your mind, how in the world did those girls ever become friends? Because we could not look more opposite than we do. You see what I look like here, 5'4", blonde. My friend Mary Ann is half Japanese, and so she has the most gorgeous raven black hair, jet black hair. She has the most unusual shaped eyes. I know of nobody else on this earth who has eyes shaped like that except for the little children that she's given birth to. She has this beautiful skin coloring, but not only do all those things make us look different, but she's like 6 foot tall. She's not really 6 foot tall, but when I stand next to her, she looks 6 foot tall to me. And one of the most hilarious girlfriend experiences of my life had to be when Mary Ann and I shared a dressing room in the Herald's outlet in Texas. Very unusual opportunity because Mary Ann and I haven't lived in the same town for about 13 years, and so we don't shop together. We had met in the Dallas area. We had gone shopping. The store was crowded with people. There was one dressing room, and it was huge. So we took all our stuff into this dressing room, which, by the way, how many men do you know would share a dressing room with one another? Now, that is something you can only do with a good girlfriend. Well, my friend Mary Ann looks to die for, phenomenal in black and white. You can just imagine with that jet black hair. And so her side of the dressing room is all black and white. There are virtually no two colors on earth that I look worse in than plain white and solid black. I'm a cream kind of gal. So my whole side of the dressing room is creams and butter yellows and tans and all these nice little warm colors. Well, Mary Ann is all legs. Her legs are like up to my armpits. And no waist. I am no legs and all waist. So in this dressing room, standing in front of the mirror, she has, and there's not a stinking pair of pants in the entire store that when she puts them on, you do not see her ankles. Every pair. Well, there is not one pair of pants in the entire store that I don't have rolled up 4 or 5 times just so that I could see my toes down there. So in the dressing room, we look like Laurel and Hardy next to each other. So the lesson from Mary Ann is friends come in all shapes and sizes, because although we do not look anything alike, and as a matter of fact, when I first met Mary Ann, I thought, now we would never be friends. But do we not look anything alike, but I am sure if you were to x-ray our hearts inside, they would look identical. Because Mary Ann is what Lucy Maud Montgomery would call in her Anne of Green Gables series, she is my kindred spirit. Because our hearts beat like one. We have the same passion to know God. We have the same passion for ministry. We feel the same conviction about being part of helping others grow in their relationship to Him. There are so many things about us that are just the exact same, that she really is my kindred spirit. Dee Bresden, in her book, The Friendships of Women, says that while a person can find friends by of what a kindred spirit or a soul sister kind of gal girlfriend would be, I have brought one of the birthday cards that I've received from Mary Ann. as I said, we don't live in the same town. We haven't for at least 13 years. And the saddest byproduct of all is that we never get to share our birthdays together. But we've shared a lot of pretend birthdays. And the thing about a kindred spirit is they not only know how you would spend your most special day, but they would choose to spend it the exact same. And although we had never talked about our ideal day, she unknowingly describes it in this card. Happy birthday, Vicky. I wish I could be there to take you to lunch and give you a big hug. Close your eyes. Now pretend that we have been beamed up and over to England. Because if Marianne and I were going to hang together, that is where we would go. We would be in England. Okay, now we are walking down the street filled with cottages and quaint shops. We stop and have tea at a local bistro because my girlfriend Marianne knows I am one of the few remaining adult women on the face of this earth that abhors the smell or taste of coffee. So we would definitely be having tea at our bistro. The weather is perfect, so we have tea outside on the patio laden with roses and peonies. The waiter brings pétophores with purple, pink, and yellow icing and a wonderful chocolate torte that brings huge smiles to our faces. Because my kindred spirit knows it is not a birthday if my favorite food group is not somehow involved, that chocolate has got to be on the menu for the day. The tea is very smooth and warm, so after three refills, we powder our noses and finish our shopping for Christmas 94. Now, my birthday is in March, but Marianne and I share a common dream that we will be organized at least one time before we die. So on our pretend birthday, we are doing all our Christmas shopping in March, finding perfect gifts for each and every family member without any headaches or sore feet. The chocolate torte was magic, causing each of us to lose that last 5 pounds, so that when we tried on clothes at Harrods, everything fit perfectly, even that new spring swimsuit. After making ample purchases with our limitless credit cards, we walked back to our palace where our servants drew our bubble bath. Now, she is speaking my love language right here. Servants drawing bubble baths, I am there. I am there. And provided fresh pajamas. And when we were starting to get sleepy, we were beamed back to our own houses and tucked into our beds with sugar plums dancing in our heads. How's that for a birthday trip? Happy birthday. I love you, Marianne. That is a kindred spirit. So friends come in all shapes and sizes. The second lesson I've learned from my friend Marianne is that soul sisters are worth the cost of maintenance. Now you can imagine not living in the same town for so many years. It has taken some time and some energy and sometimes a little bit of cash to maintain our friendship. But are soul sisters worth the cost of maintenance? Well, right now in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, is a woman who's praying for each and every one of you in this room. And she's praying for me, too. And if my world were to come crashing through tonight, all it would take is one phone call. And I am confident she would drop everything and try to be exactly what I needed her to be at that moment in time. Are soul sisters worth the cost of maintenance? There is not a single solitary moment of my life that goes by that I question. That I question the answer to that. I know it without a doubt. Soul sisters are definitely worth the cost of maintenance. Then there's my friend Dana. And now the lesson I've learned from my friend Dana is the sweetness of service with a smile. And I think the story of how I met Dana will pretty much exemplify how she lives this out. I had just been married about a year. My husband and I had moved back to Oklahoma City, and my friend Denise, who I described earlier, was trying to get me to lead a Bible study in this church, even though I hadn't been there a year. That's the way Denise and I work. You may find lots of times in Good Girlfriends, one of you is the great organizer thinker, and the other one has to sell all her ideas. I'm the front man in our team. I've always got to sell the idea. So I'm standing up before Sunday school, telling about this Bible study that we want to do and what we're going to study, but we didn't have a place to lead the Bible study. Well, I'm telling you, before my Bobo was seated on my chair, there was a woman on the second row that had ripped out a deposit slip from her checkbook, circled her name and address, handed it to me and said, "You don't know me, but my name is Dana Brown, and you're more than welcome to have your Bible study at my house." For all Dana Brown knew, Denise and I could have been axe murderers, ready to come in and take total charge of her house. But she invited us in her home, and we met there, I bet, for 2 years. And because of that, she became one of my very best girlfriends. And I'm telling you, if you need childcare, if you need your plants watered while you're out of town, your pool maintained, your garden weeded, my friend Dana, before you have time to ask her to do those things, she is already volunteering and always with a smile as if to say, you know, there's nothing else I would rather do than pick up your mail for you while you're out of town at some wonderful locale for a solid week. That is service with a smile, and that's a very sweet lesson that I've learned from her. A second lesson I've learned from my friend Dana is the blessing of weeping and rejoicing. Romans 12:15 says that we are to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And my friend Dana Brown and I have done an awful lot of weeping and rejoicing together. You know, one of the most difficult things that I've ever had to do was to tell Dana that I was pregnant. And the reason that was so difficult is that for years she had been trying to get that way, and it was a brand new thought in my head. So the day that I went to tell her, I remember going with fear and trepidation, wondering how that was going to affect her and how it would affect our friendship. But I'm telling you, the way she responded that day sealed our friendship for life, because she reached out, squealed, hugged me, and said words I have never forgotten. She said, "Vicki, I don't know if Ken and I will ever have children, but one thing I do know, and that is that I want to be part of yours." She said, "I want to do everything. I want to go maternity shopping. Please don't worry about me or leave me out. I want to experience the whole thing." That is a good girlfriend. And one of the all-time sweetest joys of my life happened, ironically, 9 months after I brought my baby Casey home from the hospital, when my husband Brian and I drove Ken and Dana to their own delivery room of sorts and got to be the only two people in the room with them when they were handed their brand new adopted daughter, who we are godparents for. We've held hands during family funerals. We have done the good, the bad, and the ugly. We have done the whole nine yards there. I very much believe that shared joy is joy doubled, and shared sorrow is sorrow halved. And I've learned that lesson from my friend Dana. From my friend Cindy. Now, Cindy is another friend that if I were to stand her up here, you would wonder how we became friends. Because if you can remember Little House on the Prairie, Cindy is like Ma Ingalls. And I have always thought that Cindy would be most content in a remote cabin in the woods with no other humans around her other than her little family, birthing her babies in that cabin without water, homeschooling them, and baking bread all day long. And you've probably listened to me talk just long enough to know that that would make me stark raving lunatic mad. But I tell you what, my friend Cindy, what I have learned from her is a praying friend is a priceless friend, because my friend Cindy can flat do business with God when it comes to prayer. I remember one particular instance years ago when I was supposed to speak at a ladies' event at our home church, and this was in before my sanity-saving hysterectomy, and I was I had a couple of absolutely beyond awful, ugly years there. And as sometimes happens in speaking, just every once in a while, it just does not come together. God does not seem to want you to have a clue what you're supposed to speak on. And this event had been scheduled for months, and I had asked and asked. I was reading my Bible every day, but I was getting no direction whatsoever. And it had come down to not just the week, but the day before I was to speak. And I still did not know what I was supposed to speak about. And I was absolutely miserable in pain. And I remember making one phone call the day before I spoke. And I called my friend Cindy. I explained to her what was going on. I told her how I felt, shed several tears on the phone, and asked her if she would please pray. Well, I didn't really ask her. I begged her to please pray. And then I did the only thing I knew to do, and that is that I took a pain pill and I crawled up in fetal position next to the phone. I could not even get to the bed, and I laid down there on the floor until I finally fell asleep. Well, I want you to know, when I woke up a couple hours later, I pulled out a sheet of paper and a pen, and from top to bottom, that entire session wrote itself. God merely used my hand. You know, ladies, that was not pain medicine that makes that kind of thing happen, because while I was asleep, my friend Cindy was at work, and she was praying on my behalf. And so what I've learned from her is a praying friend is a priceless friend, and I am deeply, deeply grateful for the many, many times that she has bailed me out through her prayers. Job 16, 20 and 21 says, "My intercessor is my friend. As my eyes pour out tears to God, on behalf of a man, he pleads with God as a man pleads for his friend." And if you want to be a good girlfriend, then lift another up in prayer and be faithful to pray for her and allow them to experience the huge blessing of a praying friend. My friend Robin, the lesson I've learned from her is the blessing of transparency and listening. I quoted Proverbs 25 earlier, one of my favorite verses, that the plans in a man's heart are like deep waters, but a man of understanding draws him out. And what I love about my friend Robin is how unbelievably transparent she is. She is one of the few people in my life that I don't feel like I'm always trying to pull information out of, because she will very freely share with me her struggles, her heartaches, her fears, her weaknesses. She is very open about those things. And because of that, she is truly a breath of fresh air in my life. And I very much value that in her. What I also value is that she allows me to do the same thing. She stops and takes time to listen to me. And she asks me questions like nobody else in my life asks. And then she's quiet long enough to actually hear me babble on until I finally get through to the answer. And I do love that about my friend Robin. Seneca says that one of the most beautiful qualities of true friendship is to understand and to be understood. And my friend Robin makes me feel understood, and she also helps me to understand her. I think that when we're not transparent, that we really do our friendships a disservice. There's a poem I came across not too long ago that I think really spells this out. It's called "If I Had Known," and it's by Mary Carolyn Davies. "If I had known what trouble you were bearing, what griefs were in the silence of your face, I would have been more gentle and more caring, and tried to give you gladness for a space. I would have brought more warmth into the place, if I had known. If I had known what thoughts despairing drew you, why do we never try to understand? I would have lent a little friendship to you and slipped my hand within your hand and made your stay more pleasant in the land if I had known." We walk around with hurts and frustrations and anger bottled up inside of us that somebody else is just ready and willing to help us deal with. But when we keep it bottled up and when we do not allow ourselves to be transparent and open with the people in our lives, with our girlfriends that we're talking about in particular tonight, we keep them at a distance. And two bad things happen. The first is that we do not get the help and comfort we need. And the second bad thing is we rob them from the joy of being able to be a true friend and to really minister. So I do think it's very important that we're transparent, and I'm very, very grateful to my friend Robin. My friend Stephanie, the lesson I've learned from her is that there is absolutely always room for one more. Because when Stephanie and I became friends just a couple of years ago, I had a very nice, healthy set of girlfriends. I had the best friends I had ever had in my life, and probably would not have articulated to you that I needed a new friend. Stephanie was pretty new in town when she found herself surprisingly pregnant. But not only was she surprisingly pregnant, she had 3 children under the age of 5. And because she had 3 children under the age of 5, her body was in shambles inside. And her doctor put her to bed immediately and told her not to so much as bend over to pick up a piece of paper off the floor with 3 children under 5. And I can remember my friend Denise coming to me saying, "Vicki, we're just flat going to have to take care of her. There is nobody else to take care of her, and we are going to have to do it." So Denise used her great organizational abilities and in no time at all blissfully set up meals for Stephanie through her entire pregnancy. Now, my schedule, for some reason, was a little more flexible than some of the other gals in our circle, so I went over every Thursday to do Stephanie's laundry. Now, I know that probably makes me sound like a great servant kind of gal, but I can tell you right up front, before lightning strikes me, that I am, one, not good at laundry, and two, it would have been the last thing that I wanted to do. It just so happened it's what she needed to have done, and so I could do it, so I did it. Now, I may not be the very best at laundry, and I may not have the most astute organizational skills, but if there is one thing that I can do and do well, I can chat with the best of them. And not only can I chat, but I also can listen and can ask a good question or two. And I tell you, you can get intimate with somebody really quick when you're folding their underwear. And so in no time at all, Stephanie and I became lifelong friends. And when I think of missing out on that friendship because I didn't think I needed a new girlfriend at that point in time, I can't imagine. Stephanie and I share the same passion about marriage and vigilantly protecting the marriages that we have. We share the same passions about our children. We expect the same type of behaviors from them. We are very much an oddity in many ways among our circle. And I can't imagine missing out on those things just because I didn't recognize that I needed a new girlfriend. So the lesson she has taught me is that there is absolutely always room for one more. I don't think we can ever have enough girlfriends. Absolutely not. And the last two friends I want to share with you tonight are my friends Kelly and Nolene. And the lesson that, these are both newer friends, and the lesson that I've learned from Kelly and Nolene is that dreams are made dreamier when they're shared by two. Because Kelly and Nolene are my writing buddies. 1 year ago today, my writing had consisted of about 20 years of pouring my heart and soul into journals that I was sure everybody else would think were hokey, melodramatic, sentimental, and just really silly. But I was really encouraged to submit a couple pieces for publication. I submitted three pieces. I gave the guidelines to my friend Kelly, who also submitted three pieces. Like is not supposed to happen. A couple months later, we both get a letter that we have each had two pieces accepted in this devotional book right here, Why Fret That God Stuff. And what made that huge dream so much better is because I shared it with Kelly. And I can tell you honestly before God that a chief thought running through my mind during those 2 months is, oh God, don't let my pieces get accepted if Kelly's don't. I very much wanted it to be something we did together. And we have had more fun with this book. We drug another friend to the local Barnes & Noble, made her take a picture of us between the shelves like we were these great budding authors, you know, with smiles bigger than Dallas plastered on our faces. Well, since then, I've had pieces accepted in three other books that are already out and published. The last one is this one that just came out this week, Seasons of a Woman's Heart. And my friend Kelly also has a piece in this book as well. And that is so fun. Well, since Kelly and Nolene are like-hearted in this whole writing thing, Nolene is a former English teacher, so she's the one that tells us where to put our punctuation and stuff. They understand about deadlines. And when I need to hole up in my study for a little while, I have a book contract right now that I'm working on. And they understand when that's happening that I don't have a lot of extra time just to sit around and chat, but that I will. And we give each other a lot of leeway because of that. And that's a precious thing to know that I don't have to always explain that, yes, I really am busy and I really am doing something productive, even though nobody else is seeing it. No, the laundry's piled. Yes, the laundry's piled up. And, you know, I think it's been 2 days since I've actually cooked dinner. Kelly and Nolene know and understand about that. A real friend is one who helps us think our best thoughts, do our noblest deeds, and be our finest selves. And that's what they are to me. Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And my friends Kelly and Nolene do that for me, and I do that for them. And that's a great lesson to learn from our girlfriends. So who needs girlfriends? We absolutely all do, don't we? We all need girlfriends. Henry Van Dyke says, a friend is what the heart needs all the time. And I believe we all need girlfriends all the time, that none of us are exempt from that. I believe variety is a good thing, that we ought to have lots of girlfriends, that we ought to not depend on just one friend to meet our each and every need. but that we ought to spread ourselves out a little bit, broaden our horizons, and experience the great variety of girlfriends that there are out there. A girlfriend is the one who tells you there's food in your teen and toilet paper stuck to the bottom of your shoe. Not just anybody will tell you that, but a good girlfriend will. A girlfriend tells you the truth even when it hurts, but it helps. A girlfriend is the one who bails you out when you're overcommitted, helps you spend your money, raise your kids, and sometimes figure out what to cook for supper. A girlfriend is someone who will talk to you for hours, but who can also say even more, so much louder, by never saying another word and holding you close when you're hurting and crying tears that match your own. That's what a good girlfriend is. My prayer for each and every one of us in this room is that we would be more faithful to reach out and to be a friend to the people around us, and that God would find each of us truly celebrating the friendships and the people in our life, and in particularly the girlfriends that are this family that we get to choose for ourselves. Thank you.